Welcome to the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge, a weekly show from our Toronto Maple Leafs writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, prospects, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, our team covers everything that happens with the blue and white. Come on in and pull up a chair. Welcome to the Maple Leafs Lounge.
Hey, everybody, welcome inside the lounge. I am your host, Kevin Armstrong, joined as always by my friend Peter Barrichini. Alex Hobson sends his best, but was not able to join us here today. So that means we get to make fun of Alex and that crazy mustache that he's growing. Not that Peter has much to say about that either, but
mine's coming in very nicely, though. Thanks for asking.
Very nice. Yes. So here we are. It's 8 wins in the last 9 games. The Maple Leafs are rolling, a little bit of a stumble against the LA Kings, but you can't win them all. And right there, as we talked about before the show, everyone's turning off because we get way more views when it's all negative news. So the thing is, there's not much negative going on this team right now. It's rolling. And this is kind of what I was worried about at the beginning of this season, that as much as I like watching this team perform at the level that it can perform at and has been performing at, I'm just waiting for playoffs. Like, that's all that's going to matter. I was expecting a pretty good regular season, but I'm just waiting for playoffs. Anyway, it's still fun hockey to watch. Lots of good teams coming in here. So, Peter, what have you been thinking? What's your takeaways from the last couple of games?
I mean, it's hard to pinpoint any negatives. I mean, obviously, that LA Kings game, a lot of things could have gone better for them. And even the first period against the Buffalo Sabres and even afterwards, a couple meltdowns. But you know what? I mean, yeah, you could focus on the negatives, but you know what? Like, it's hard not to focus on what's making them successful. It's that the big players are stepping up to the plate right now. Everyone's firing on all cylinders. Jack Campbell's playing like a Vezina Trophy caliber goaltender. I mean, you saw the saves that he's made the past week or so. I mean, even previously, how well he's elevated his game, and especially in that overtime against the Calgary Flames, how he basically saved them, and even throughout that whole entire game, despite the one goal that Oliver Shillington scored. Nice goal, by the way. That was just the one blip in that game. And then you have a back-to-back against Buffalo. You have Joseph Woll coming in, looking great in his debut. So there are a lot of positives to take from this game. And even so, the fact that, you know, it's like you said, I know we focus on the negatives, and obviously it's always this talking point, but you know what? The team is 10-5-1. They're after the slow start, obviously, you know, we were very concerned considering the fact that, you know, Matthews came back from injury, wasn't playing as well. Stars weren't clicking. Maybe John Tavares and William Nylander were carrying a little bit more, but everyone's starting to click together. I think now they found their groove. They found their identity as a team. They're going to be hard to play against. And I think this is what we should be looking forward from here on out.
Now, there's been some interesting dialogue around the team because it was to the point where I guess they're playing so well that now people are trying to find the negative and playing well. That I could not believe when I heard on a couple different broadcasts that there's concern that the core four is the scoring punch. It's one of those moments where you're just rolling my eyes and remote may leave my hands, but like, come on. Any team, it doesn't matter. Your first two lines are expected to be your main scoring lines. I don't care if that's your core four and your $40 million boys or not. Your first two lines should be your scoring lines. Your third line is usually your checking, and your fourth is an energy line. If you get a goal out of those guys, it's a bonus, right? Like, this isn't new. So the first two lines are scoring and the core four are scoring. Now it's the core four plus Kasha because he's a goal scoring guy lately and has blown up that whole stat about just the core four scoring. But I thought it was ludicrous. They're there to play. They're there to score. The other guys are there to be in shutdown roles and be in energy roles. So, Peter, tell me what your thoughts are on this whole problem that the core four is the scoring machine that it is for the Maple Leafs right now.
I mean, you want your big boys to step up, right? You want them to produce. I mean, case in point, I mean, what's the goal tracker up to now? 15 out of the last 17 goals have been scored by either Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, Marner. That's great. I don't understand what the issue is. I mean, I get you want to have that balance. You want to have other players step up. But at the same time, the depth was taking over at the beginning of the season where you had Engvall score the first goal, Bunting, Spezza leading the way. And now, it took a bit of time, like I mentioned, but now the top four players have, you know, seem to have found their groove. They seem to have found their stride. They're all, you know, red hot to start the season. Nylander, Tavares leading the way in team scoring right now. Mitch Marner started to come out of that, you know, massive funk where he only had one assist in the first seven games. He's starting to pick up. Austin Matthews, that shot looks terrific right now. We saw him that game-winning goal against Calgary. So I understand where there shouldn't be concern, but there should be some level of, okay, you know what? Yes, everyone, the top players are firing on all cylinders, but at some point, other players need to step up. I mean, basically, the Buffalo Sabres was the prime example of that game. You saw David Kampf score that, you know, odd bounce that went in off a skate and then through the legs of Aaron Dell. You saw Michael Bunting score. You saw Andre Kasha score. So you're seeing that depth start to rise. And more particularly, Andre Kasha, who has had more success of putting the puck in the net previously before with a 20-goal season with the Anaheim Ducks in 2017-18. This is a guy who's a fierce competitor. He goes out and plays hard. He tries to get set on the forecheck, and he's been more noticeable lately. So the fact that he's starting to produce, I believe he's had 3 goals in the last 3 or so games. That's great for him. Those are the kind of players that you need to step up and bring to the table. But at the same time, you know, depth players are depth players. If they can score, like you mentioned, Kevin, if they can score for a timely goal, and they're there to, you know, carry the load when the top four doesn't, like they were pretty much basically invisible against the Buffalo Sabres, where Tavares was the lone goal scorer. And then you had those three. So I think you should tone it down maybe just a little bit, but I can understand where you want your depth to come in and score at key time, so you have that balance.
Yeah. Too many good things going on. Got to find something. This is the Maple Leafs Lounge brought to you by the Hockey Writers. Make sure to head over to thehockeywriters.com, sign up for the morning skate, and you'll get a newsletter in your inbox every day that's got some pretty cool roundup of the whole league. It's not just scores and things like that. There's snippets and lots of interesting stuff in there. It's a good read to get your day started off right. And the Daily Download every morning has all the latest scores, stats, social media, links to different stories, not only on the Hockey Writers, but in other media outlets to bring you up to date on your favorite team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And there's daily downloads on a couple of other teams as well. So head on over to the Hockey Writers and also follow us on all your favorite social media platforms. So how things have changed. Because I think it may have been, well, the season started at a different time, but it may have been about this point, this many games into the previous season, that I was like, oh, man, what's going on? William Nylander, get him out of town. He's awful. He's terrible. He's being benched. And now William Nylander, he's my favorite player to watch. I love when I see 88 go over the boards because he's up to something. And he looks like a predator on the ice, man. Like he's hunting when he's out there. And I saw a picture of Ovechkin and that really nonchalant stance that he uses right on the top of the faceoff circle. Mm-hmm. And they called it the scariest nonchalant stance in hockey. Nylander had a few goals that were right from that same spot. And he was kind of in that stance twice. And I was like, and we know there's only one guy that's taken more shots this season than William Nylander, and that's Ovi. Like Nylander is just, come undone. We love it. He looks great. I don't know what else. I've turned into a fanboy here, but I don't know what else to say about William Nylander. He looks fantastic. Peter, early running for MVP, I would say.
Team MVP, absolutely. I don't know, overall league standpoint, it's hard to, you know, do.
No, I might have been getting ahead of myself for league, but for team, yeah.
Team, okay, okay. No, I was just about to say, have you seen what this guy Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are doing? But no, definitely. I mean, you could also make the conversation about Jack Campbell, but when Nylander has been, or whenever someone needs a timely goal, who's there to get it? It's been William Nylander. He's been so clutch this season. And you saw the shot that he took. Well, it went to Andre Kasha, who tipped the puck in against Calgary. But still, the top of the circle, the one-timer, I honestly think he's really improved on his shot and in that aspect. And I know a few episodes ago, we talked about the new look power play and the setup in that regard. And the fact that he's on his off wing teeing up those shots, I think I did say it was going to be beneficial for the Maple Leafs to be that outlet, to be that, you know, unknown player. What's going to happen? Is he going to shoot? Is he going to pass? And we've seen him rip it from that top circle. And again, another prime example is the game against the Philadelphia Flyers, where Nick Ritchie made the nice pass, one timer, boom, in the net. So yeah, it's not out of the question. I think it should be a common knowledge question or easy statement or easy answer to say that, you know, he is the team's MVP right now. I mean, look at the amount of game-winning goals he's had this year compared to his previous total in his career. I think he's already have about like, what, 4 or 5? And he's already matched that or in his whole entire career this season alone. So the fact that, you know, he's producing, he has that two-way game, he's getting looks on the penalty kill. John Tavares noticed some major improvement and his take on like him being more of a leader in the offseason or heading into camp. So that's a big positive. And yeah, I mean, if you're still doubting about William Nylander and, you know, questioning about the fact that he got benched late in the game against Buffalo, let's face it. And nobody was on their best game yesterday or against Buffalo because it was a fight to the end. I mean, mistakes all around, forwards weren't connecting, but you know what? Nylander still had his looks regardless. So take the benching with a grain of salt. The guy's been carrying the team on his back all season. So if he has one bad game, it's one bad game. Compared to like out of the 16 that they played already, Nylander's been fine. He hasn't been the issue at all.
I think lining him up with Matthews, I just like that look so much better. Although Matthews and Marner were dynamite last season, they were always seeming to me like they're a very creative group. Yeah. Like when they're together, it's all about being creative and goofing around and kind of like a road hockey feel to it. Whereas Nylander and Matthews is just deadly. Like they can rip it from anywhere on the ice. They're fast. I don't know. I just like that dynamic so much better. Those two guys and Marner is playing better on the second line right now anyway. So I like it. I think that's got to be worrisome for any team when you've got Matthews and Nylander coming at you. Because Marner was always known to be passing. Nylander will shoot. We know he'll shoot. And so will Matthews. So their only problem seems to be is finding a consistent third part of that line right now. Yeah. Try Kasha on it. It's been Bunting. I don't know. I don't know who's going to be the guy there. Kasha looked pretty good.
Yeah. No, Kasha did look pretty good in that experimental role. And Alex, a few days ago, he mentioned something about like putting Andre Kasha on that top line and moving Michael Bunting down. So he was right about that. And he's been right quite a few times about the decisions that Keith has made. So I think maybe we should ask him about what the lottery numbers are going to be in the future.
Maybe that's why he's not on the show. Either he won the lottery or he's been hired by the Leafs. We don't know.
Hey, that's a win in my books, no matter what. But at the same time, I mean, you mentioned the chemistry between Matthews and Nylander, and yeah, both are still very creative, but at the same time, they take advantage of their opportunities. They don't hesitate. They don't take that extra second. And I think that's what makes Matthews and Nylander more successful than Matthews and Marner, because Marner tends to hesitate and maybe take that extra second instead of just getting the puck off quick. So the reaction time, I think, is going to be the major difference between the two.
So some people have said this story is clickbait. There is no story on the Hockey Writers that is clickbait. I can tell you that right now, because that's a big no-no. But it's been the story of a trade that was brewing with the Maple Leafs shipping out one other defenseman. And the story has been saying that the analysts, I think the best insiders in hockey, when Elliot Friedman and Chris Johnston say something's going on, something is definitely going on. There's your lottery numbers right there. If you got something to bet, go and bet right there. But, you know, about a week or a little bit over a week ago, a defenseman was being shipped out. We didn't know which one. We had an idea. It was either Travis Dermott or Justin Hall. But both guys said, this is coming. This is happening. All right. Here we are much later. Nothing's changed. And the fever pitch has gone away. And I put a story together about that because I wrote about this trade is coming, you know, and I didn't like it. And I talked about it on the show last week. I didn't like it. I think you keep the depth in the defensive role. And I like the switching around that's been happening there. But anyway, the trade didn't happen. So people are like, this is just clickbait. No, it definitely was not. This is two of the best NHL insiders saying something's going on. So that means that something happened after that. And that's what my story was, trying to figure out, because I believe those guys. So I'm trying to figure out what happened to stop that first story. And that was the trade. And so I came up with a couple of different theories. I know that Peter, you looked at the story. What were your first thoughts on why this trade didn't happen?
Well, you mentioned one of them. I think the Peter Mrazek injury may have played a big factor into that. Considering the fact that, you know, they have options for a call-up. Again, we mentioned Joelson Wall, who got his first victory, looked good in that. Eric Schallgren, who's looking good in the Marlies. And you have that depth. Obviously, Michael Hutchinson's still a big X-factor / question mark, if you will, with his play and if he's going to get any starts in the future. Again, to say that that story is clickbait, again, I'm just going to sidetrack a little bit. If you aren't listening to Elliot Friedman or Chris Johnson or Pierre LeBrun, who has all the knowledge, who knows the ins and outs, who are getting all the news stories, who are you going to listen to? I mean, let's be realistic. Let's call a spade a spade. If they're breaking it and they're saying it, it's not clickbait at all. The second point, I think, is maybe they turned their game around. They started winning. And I think that prevented them from making a major move of trading Hall or Dermott. And again, I get the depth is going to be a big sticking factor, but I think you can find an improvement over Justin Hall and over Travis Dermott. I mean, would you like to keep him in because of that? Absolutely. But at the same time, their play has been very inconsistent and up and down to this point. So if they're in the market of trying to find another option on defense, be it in that top four or top four pairing, or even as a 6-7 type of defenseman, because Timothy Liljegren's been playing great. I know Alex last week mentioned calling up Alex Biega as well. There are also a couple of other defensemen like Christian Rubens, Joey Duzak as well. Whether they're ready or not, I don't know. But if you want to try and find another depth defenseman who has experience, who can be inserted into that role, who can play, you know, second, third pairing minutes, I think that's going to help out. But then again, at the moment, Justin Hall and Dermott, despite their play inconsistent at best, they are earning their minutes. And I do think that if there is something that comes around where they do find a better improvement over either of those two, there's no doubt they're going to make a move, because if it improves the team, there's no way that Kyle Dubas is going to balk at the opportunity.
True. But I think the feeling was that there are sellers in this, that they're not looking for an upgrade. That it was, you had seven guys that were going for six roles, and three of those guys were pretty interchangeable. I'd say four. But that's that this was just shipping somebody out to get some cap room. And that's why the Mrazek injury, because that gives some extra wiggle room that you're starting to occur, the salary cap and the whole salary cap. Yeah, yeah. But I also think that when Dermott took that puck off the skate and went for an x-ray, the next game, TJ Brody got slammed into the boards by Pasternak. Yeah. He didn't skate the next day. I think that happen saying like, we're actually in quite a good spot. We've got insurance here, having a seventh guy that can rotate in at any time. I just think it's crazy to get rid of somebody that can do that. And they're rotating them in. Rasmus Sandin mm-hmm. got sat yeah. down, definitely not for his play, but for the fact that he's been playing a lot. This is his first full-time, and it's nice. Let him sit down. Mm-hmm. Don't run these guys ragged. 82 games. You can rotate them around, and that's why it works perfect to have seven guys, in my view.
Yeah, so. And you mentioned the Dermott puck off his foot, Brody, and the reason why they sat Rasmus Sandin against Buffalo was because he has been dealing with some bumps and bruises. So the fact that, you know, you have someone to come into that lineup who could take the spot, again, play out of the question. The fact that they have someone to be inserted into the lineup if and when someone needs to take a break, that is the perfect scenario.
Right. Yeah. And the other side of that was maybe this was just testing the market, because we did see defensemen go for a pretty penny in the offseason. So maybe it was just floating it out there. We've got an extra defenseman. Would anyone like to pay up? And no one came with enough. So it could be that too. But there was definitely something going on. Maybe there still is, but it's definitely something going on. There's always something going on in Toronto, and it's very little, if any time, is it ever just made up stuff. There's something happening. You don't need clickbait for this team. You just don't. Never. There's always something going on.
Never.
So with that, we've touched on the story points for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So now, as always with the Lounge, we like to bring in some friends to talk about what else is going on in the league. So stay right there. The friends are joining us in just one second. All right. Magic of TV. Look at that. There's four of us now. We've got our good friends, Matt from the Hockey Writers, who he does all these shows really, but he's a specialist with Vancouver Canucks, but he's all over the place. Right, Matt? You're just the guy right now. Just the guy.
I'm all over the place. I jump on shows whenever needed. So,
and we also have Colin Newby, who joined us last week for the Philadelphia Flyers, and he's going to help fill in some gaps for us on some upcoming games, as well as talk Flyers hockey too. So let's start with Matthew out on the West Coast. We talked earlier, Peter and I, about the fact that it's only good news with Toronto. Well, opposite side of the country, opposite news, because it is bad news in Vancouver right now. What is going on with the Canucks? I thought looking at that roster looked like a pretty good team, but it's not there at all, and it's seemingly getting worse.
Yeah, it's a disaster. I mean, you're looking at on paper, the Canucks are supposed to be good, supposed to be an improved team. Offensively, brought in Bradshaw, thinking that they're going to get better defensively as well. Look at underlying numbers for the last two games. They were a little better defensively, but last two games, they allowed 14 goals. Turnovers galore, look like they don't want to play the game. Now everyone's spending out, everyone's green out. They're falling behind a lot. I mean, yes, it's early, but I mean, it's hard to come back when, especially when all the California teams are all winning, when they were supposed to be winning. So, I mean, I think it's compounding the fact Canucks just don't look like a playoff team. Four lines, it seems like no lines can get going. The only guy that's really scoring is JT Miller right now. Garland started out really well. He's played pretty well throughout, but I mean, the team doesn't look like they have an identity at all. I'm not sure what this team is. I mean, are they a fast team? Are they a team that run and gun? Are they a defensive team? And now Demko doesn't look Demko is a bright spot, and I mean, nothing on him. He's been amazing. When it's two-on-ones over and over, it's hard to place full blame on the goaltender.
Matt, what Peter, do you think needs to change with this group? I mean, they made a couple key moves in the offseason, bringing in Garland, bringing in OEL. They let Nate Schmidt walk, who seems to be finding his groove and is a very strong defensive stalwart with the Winnipeg Jets right now. Is it just overall team defense that needs to be addressed quickly?
I think, I don't know. There's just so many problems with this team right now. I mean, team defense, they can't score. Their stars aren't scoring. And now the goaltending doesn't look, you know, it's allowing, Demko's allowing a lot of goals now. It's just overall, I'm not sure what is a quick fix. I don't think there is one. And there was someone was mentioning about defensemen like Tanev and Schmidt when they leave. On the teams they are on right now, they're playing a lot better. And is that a question of systems and coaching that they play? They just don't play well in this, whatever Travis Green's system is. So, I mean, I don't have an answer. They need a third line center. They thought Jason Dickinson was going to be that. He can't win a faceoff. So how are you supposed to be a third line center when you can't win a draw? Their penalty kills last in the league by a long shot. And their power play can't get going. So, I mean, I don't know what's – there's no really quick fix to really fix this team right now, in my opinion at least.
Well, and the owner's on the road trip with them now. So, yeah. I don't know. If change is coming, it could be – but both GM and coach are on the last year of their contract, right? Do you let that ride or do you just fire them and start the rebuild right now?
Well, I mean, Green was just re-signed to I'm not sure how many years it was, but, I mean, this something has to change. I mean, I think I wrote an article a couple days ago about I think Benning shouldn't pick the next head coach because I think his last and there's opinions out there that he didn't really pick the last two, but he was still in power when he when these guys were chosen. So it's not like he didn't have any input. So I think change has to. I think someone has to be gone sometime this year if they think that they still have a chance at doing something. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be the coach before the GM. That's always what it is. Or it's both in one fell swoop. I don't know when it'll happen.
Okay. So this is the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge where we've got some extra friends in to talk hockey with us. Make sure you head on over to thehockeywriters.com and check out the Morning Skate. You can sign up for that newsletter as well as jump into the daily downloads, and you can click on over the Philadelphia Flyers and find our friend Colin Newby there. You know, in hockey, we talk all about, you know, kind of what we just talked about with Matthew there is the on-ice performance, but there's so much other stuff going on in this sport. And we had two reminders of that this week when Emily Cave dropped the puck for the Boston Bruins Edmonton Oilers game. She is the wife of Colby Cave, who passed away last season. And what an emotional event to watch Emily come out there and do that for the two teams that Colby played for. And then we had Kevin Hayes return to the ice for the Philadelphia Flyers. And that was awesome to watch because that guy's been through a lot. So Colin, if you can pick up the story from there.
Sure. So Kevin Hayes has built a reputation over the past couple of years as a really energetic guy, just the type of person that everybody loves to be around. Everybody in the Flyers dressing room will laud Kevin Hayes for what he's done to the team chemistry and just what a character person he is. Over the summer, Hayes lost his older brother, Jimmy. He was 31 years old, died of an overdose, unfortunately. But obviously that tragedy really rocked the Hayes family and all the way through the hockey world, really. Hayes also faced a little bit more adversity through the offseason. He got a core surgery at the end of the 2020-21 season. And then had another core surgery right before training camp with some sort of aggravation. They didn't release too much information about it, but in the end, it was two surgeries in a couple months' time and the duration of an offseason. Hayes was back last night against the Dallas Stars, and that's uplifting for the Flyers. It didn't show out on the ice last night as they lost 5-2 to Dallas, but having Hayes just around the team in the dressing room has been big for them in the early going. And the players have talked about that enough times as just to how much that boosts their morale. And I think that'll be really good moving forward. And James Van Riemsdyk even put it that the GM, Kevin Hayes, as he joked, brought in Keith Yandle, who's a good friend of his from growing up in the Boston area. Cam Atkinson played with Hayes at BC. Then they even got Patrick Brown in the preseason, and he's an old friend of Kevin Hayes as well.
Colin, what do you think this means going forward with the Philadelphia Flyers, given the fact that Kevin Hayes does mean so much to the team, and in that, despite the loss, he did came back and he got an assist in one game. So how do you think his presence is going to uplift this team even more, despite the fact that, you know, they got a relatively good record and they're keeping good pace in that Metropolitan Division right now?
X's and O's wise, it's huge. As you said, he did get the one assist last night. That was big for him to get some momentum. I also thought that he did pretty well on the second power play unit, and that's been a weakness of theirs throughout the early season games, is that the second power play unit has just not gotten any type of pressure on the opponent's penalty kills. Having Hayes in the 2C spot is going to allow Derek Brassard to slip into a little bit more comfortable of a role. He's been forced into a second line center role, and at this point in his career, that's just probably not the best spot for him. So he had, I want to say, 5 or 6 games where he was putting up points early in the season, but you can't expect that to continue forever. So the fact that Brassard is, in a way, relegated down to a lesser role is definitely a good thing for a Flyers team that hasn't been scoring over the past 5, 6 games. So to have Hayes in there, who's properly equipped to be a 2C over a veteran like Brassard, is definitely big, because the lineup shuffles a lot and guys are in more appropriate roles than they have been in the first 13 games of the season now.
So coming up this week for Toronto is Nashville, and then it's Metro guys with the Rangers, the Penguins, the Islanders. You've seen those teams a lot more than we have in the past season and a half. What should fans be looking for out of those Metro teams?
With the Rangers, I think it starts with Adam Fox. I mean, this guy is one of the best young players in the NHL. Every time you hear his name come up, everybody compliments him. Everybody talks about how great he is. But I would still say he's underrated in a way, because he doesn't come up as much as some of the bigger names, these younger guys do. I just can't talk enough about how good Fox actually is, especially as a puck mover. He had 5 assists in a game against the Flyers last year, which, do you want to say that reflects more on the Flyers defense or on Fox? I don't know, but yeah, one of the best young players in the NHL. They have Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko kind of struggling to get their footing under them. Their ice time has gone down a little bit in the last couple weeks or so. But, I mean, you still have a lot of potential there. And they've climbed into a playoff spot in the Metropolitan Division, which I believe is the deepest in the NHL. So the fact that they have that third spot, they're looking pretty good in the early going.
Right. And we saw Pittsburgh, so we don't need to talk too much about that. Oh, that better not be a replay of that.
Nope.
One.
Nope.
How about the Islanders? They're out strong.
So the Islanders are in last place in the Metro, if you can even believe that. I think they are a strong team, but as I just said a minute ago, I think this is the deepest division in the NHL. Before the season, I said the Islanders are probably the favorites in this division, and they haven't gotten off to a terrible start or anything, but you can see how competitive the Metro is. You have teams like Columbus and New Jersey, who maybe you didn't expect to be off to great starts, but they're playing well in the early going. And the Islanders, even with a decent point percentage, they're buried in last place because they have a couple of games in hand where they can make that up. But, I mean, they got to do it. They've been inconsistent at times. People don't necessarily realize back in the 1920 season, right before the pause, they were on a terrible losing streak. And they're probably the team that benefited the most from that long layoff, because when they got into the bubble, they really hit their stride. They ended up making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, ultimately losing to Tampa Bay. But that's when they really started to play their best hockey, was when the teams that were hotter at the point of the pause in March 2020 had that long layoff and kind of cooled their momentum.
Yeah. I meant strong as in Vancouver Canucks strong. There was an eye roll for our podcast listeners. We had an eye roll. You might have heard it, actually. That's all the time we've got for the Maple Leafs Lounge. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to Matt and Colin for stepping in and helping out bring some negativity to this all positive show. So we'll see if the views go up. But it's been a great time talking hockey with all our friends. We will see you next week in the Maple Leafs Lounge.